Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. China says it does not intend to ignite a trade war with the U.S. because the move would be disastrous for the entire world. Meanwhile, President Trump is responding to criticism from world leaders who oppose the tariffs he imposed.
So we put on tariffs, and the European Union's out there. Well, we're going to put on. I said, you can't go any higher than you are anyway. And they have trade barriers. We can't even sell our farming goods in there. They totally restrict us. So then they say, we want those tariffs taken off. I said, good. Open up the barriers and get rid of your tariffs. And if you don't do that, we're going to tax Mercedes-Benz. We're going to tax BMW. You want to have money?
Trump signed proclamations Thursday imposing a 25% tariff on imported steel and 10% on imported aluminum, with the new taxes set to go into effect this month. Trump imposed the tariffs despite pleas from friends and allies who warned the new measures could ignite a trade war. The U.S. president acknowledges that he has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and that also means no missile testing by the North Koreans.
They announced that he's not going to send missiles up anymore until through the meetings. Well, think of that. You know, we were getting a lot of missiles sent. I wouldn't say Japan was thrilled. Missiles flying over Japan. They're very happy with what I'm doing. And who else could do it? I mean, honestly, when you think.
Trump said he has spoken with the leaders of China and Japan about his acceptance of Kim's invitation, and they are supportive of his unprecedented diplomatic mission. Some experts, though, are cautioning against over-optimism about the prospects for a breakthrough, questioning the North's sincerity toward denuclearization. This is VOA News.
I called on the legislature to give me a bill that will allow us to make our schools far safer, allowing for much greater law enforcement presence and for hardening our school buildings. This bill does that. I called on the legislature to give me a bill which provides more funding for mental health services. This bill does that.
That's Rick Scott, who was governor of the U.S. state of Florida, who also says a bill he signed into law raises the minimum age that a person can buy a rifle from 18 to 21. That is in response to the mass shooting in which the gunman used a rifle to kill 17 people. Raising the age prompted a response from the National Rifle Association, which says it's suing to protect the Second Amendment rights of people. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration moved forward with plans to place a bump stock or a ban on bump stocks. That's the device that enabled the Las Vegas shooter to fire a semi-automatic rifle like a fully automatic rifle, resulting in dozens of deaths. The NRA did not immediately comment on the administration's latest move, but said previously it would await the publication of the proposed regulation before adopting a position. The World Health Organization reports it has verified dozens of attacks on healthcare facilities, ambulances, services, and workers in Syria's combat zone this year.
The attacks have had devastating consequences for the civilian population in these combat zones. In the month of February alone, violent incidents disrupted 15,000 medical consultations and nearly 1,500 surgeries, many life-saving. The World Health Organization is calling on all of Syria's warring parties to immediately stop attacking people caring for the sick and wounded. It warns attacks against medical facilities and medical personnel are prohibited under international humanitarian law and, in certain instances, may amount to war crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
British government ministers met Saturday to discuss the case of a Russian man who was mysteriously poisoned by a rare nerve agent in the town of Salisbury nearly a week ago. Home Secretary Amber Rudd said Saturday after the meeting that it is still too early to assign blame for the poisoning of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia.
There are over 250 counterterrorism police from 8 out of our 11 counterterrorism units involved. There's over 200 witnesses involved, and there's over 240 pieces of evidence.
About 180 British soldiers have been deployed to Salisbury, which is a normally quiet town in southwestern England. They're there to help officials decontaminate the area. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clotter is off.
Malnourished children at risk of dying are 300,000 at risk of dying. Just think of that, 300,000 little kids. We have 762,000 people that are still displaced.
Increasing hunger in Kasai and Tanganyika in central and eastern DR Congo as fighting and widespread displacement continue.
The women were amazing throughout. They were fearless. They were determined. They were kept for about 6 hours without any charge.
Cameroonian police free 40 of the more than 100 women arrested while trying to ask President Paul Biya to negotiate a peaceful political transition.
We find a county that is catering for a big population of people. They do not even have a tissue processor machine, you know, to be able to process those tissues and check whether this is cancer or not.
And Kenyan healthcare specialists work to provide widespread support for children stricken with cancer. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. The United Nations says hunger is soaring in the Democratic Republic of Congo, mainly because of fighting and widespread displacement in Kasai and Tanganyika in central and eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations reports 7.7 million people in DRC, mainly in rural areas, are suffering from acute hunger. This is a 30% increase since 2016, and the situation on the ground does not augur well for the future. Conditions are particularly grim in the Kasai region. Spokeswoman for the World Food Programme, Bettina Lusher, tells VOA 3.2 million people there, or one in four, are suffering from severe food shortages.
Malnourished children at risk of dying are 300,000 at risk of dying. Just think of that, 300,000 little kids. We have 762,000 people that are still displaced.
The most worrying aspect, says Lusher, is that the DRC has fallen off the international agenda and aid agencies are not receiving the money they need to provide life-saving assistance. She says WFP is so severely underfunded, it was forced to cut food rations in half for beneficiaries in Kasai in November.
The hard thing is how people are affected. People sometimes have fled into the bush. People have died there because there was just no aid coming. So I think it's a really, really tough one.
The United Nations has appealed for $168 billion to provide humanitarian assistance for 10 and 1/2 million people in DRC this year. The response so far has been tepid. In hopes of stimulating greater support, the UN plans to hold a large international donors pledging conference in Geneva in mid-April. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Cameroon, police have freed 40 of the more than 100 women arrested while trying to ask President Paul Biya, who has been in power for 36 years, to negotiate a peaceful political transition and solve the crisis caused by separatist groups demanding the independence of the English-speaking from the French-speaking regions of the Central African state. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
National coordinator of the opposition Cameroon People's Party, CPP, and former presidential aspirant, Edith Kabangwala, says she led the women in the protest march Thursday to commemorate Women's Day. She says Cameroon women could not celebrate the day against the backdrop of human rights abuses and conflicts that have left hundreds of civilians, separatist fighters, and soldiers dead in the English-speaking regions of the Central African state. She says Cameroon has been sailing from one crisis to another because of President Paul Biya's poor leadership.
As mothers of the nation, we feel it's our responsibility to stand up and to take the necessary steps to bring back harmony and peace. How do we facilitate a non-violent political transition for Cameroon? So this is a tremendous moment for the fight for respect for human rights, democracy, political transition in Cameroon.
Edith, who is popularly known in Cameroon as Kawala, says some of the protesters were unlawfully arrested, tortured psychologically by Biya's police, and detained in the capital Yaoundé for several hours.
The women were amazing throughout. They were fearless. They were determined. They were kept for about 6 hours without any charge and without any apologies nor explanations from the government of Cameroon.
During the protest, the women demanded a meeting with Biya to discuss the failure of his government to provide basic services and facilities like water and electricity to a majority of the Cameroon population, despite the country's natural and financial resources. Hundreds of supporters of the women, including 31-year-old Yaoundé-based teacher Renee Ahanda, marched to the police charge office when the women were arrested to ask for their release. Ahanda says he does not understand why the women were arrested.
Soutien à toi, Kawala. Tu as marché. Tout le monde est libre. La liberté voudrait quoi?
He says he totally supports Kawala for exercising her democratic rights and her freedom to express herself. He says Kawala is a big and educated political figure who understands her rights and assumes responsibility for what she does. Since November 2016, Biya has been battling with the unrest in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions that started with teachers and lawyers frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets, calling for reforms and greater autonomy. It degenerated with separatist calls for independence. Last October, secessionist groups declared the independence of the English-speaking southwest and northwest regions of Cameroon they call Ambazonia, declaring Ayuk Tabe Julius, who was in exile in Nigeria, as their president. Armed conflicts erupted, prompting a crackdown of the military. Biya has ruled Cameroon since November 1982. His party supporters have been calling on him to run for president again in elections expected by September this year. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Women worldwide have less access to jobs than men, and those who do get work are paid less and receive fewer benefits than men, says the International Labour Organization in a new report. The report, World Employment and Social Outlook, Trends for Women 2018, the global snapshot, comes as International Women's Day was celebrated only last week. From Geneva, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA on the launch of the ILO study.
The International Labour Organization reports notable progress has been made in improving women's prospects for work over the past 20 years. Its findings on labor trends, however, indicate much remains to be done to close the persistent inequalities suffered by women. Globally, the ILO finds only 6 women are employed for every 10 men with jobs. It reports the gap in gender equality is less in the wealthiest parts of the world than in the poorest, and the gap is significantly wider in the emerging middle-income countries. Regionally, the report shows women fare worst in the Arab states and northern Africa, where unemployment rates for women are twice as large as men's. It says Southern Asia runs a close second in lack of gender parity. ILO Research Department Director Damien Grimshaw tells VOA social and cultural issues hamper women's ability to find paid employment in these regions.
I think all too often we might blame some of the variety in women's participation on women's expectations and ambitions, when in fact there are still too many obstacles. Social norms and other cultural norms which impinge upon the rights and entitlements of women in the world of work, which needs to be looked at.
Grimshaw notes that social and cultural issues as obstacles to female employment also are entrenched, but to a lesser extent, in the United States and Europe. The ILO acknowledges another critical issue which has received scant attention is that of violence and harassment in the workplace. The ILO says this unacceptable situation will, for the first time, be addressed at its annual conference in June. ILO officials say discussions will focus on enacting a possible international treaty aimed at preventing violence and harassment. If this happens, they say it will be a game changer. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has resumed his normal schedule in Kenya Sunday after cancelling events the day before because he was not feeling well. Tillerson laid a wreath at the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi Sunday at a ceremony to honor those killed and injured in a bombing there 20 years ago. Among the survivors present was Joash Okindo, who continues to work at the U.S. Embassy after having both of his legs broken in the blast. Okindo, who wore a medal of bravery at the ceremony, was a guard at the embassy the day of the attack. The Secretary of State arrived in Nairobi Friday from Djibouti. He kicked off his trip with a visit to Ethiopia on Wednesday, where he met with the country's Prime Minister and the African Union Commission Chief.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
A new mass movement, the Coalition for Nigeria, was recently inaugurated in the country's capital, Abuja. The group, formed by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, says it's not happy with the administration of President Muhammad Buhari. Its members say they want to make Nigerians aware of the need to have a change of leadership in next year's elections. For VOA, Mike Mbonyi has more from Enugu.
Former Nigeria President Olusegun Obasanjo expressed his views in a public letter to the incumbent Muhammadu Buhari. He blamed his administration for the rough times the nation is now experiencing. Obasanjo advised Buhari not to seek re-election in 2019. During his term, the president has spent many months outside the country seeking unspecified medical care. Obasanjo says the 76-year-old leader is too old and needs, in his words, a dignified and honorable retirement and time to reflect and to heal. He cited several issues that continue to concern him, including corruption in government, insecurity, poverty, and a sluggish economy. A new report by Transparency International rated Nigeria 148 out of 180 nations perceived to be the most corrupt. And it said the burden could cost the country up to 37% of gross domestic product if it's not dealt with. The group says that over the past 7 years, billions of dollars have been stolen, for example, through inflated or fake military contracts. On the other hand, the Buhari administration says it has recovered billions in stolen money and assets in its campaign against corruption. In his public letter, the former president also expressed in boots of the major parties, the ruling All Progressive Congress and the opposition People's Democratic Party. He says both are wobbly and unfit to govern. The former president says the Coalition for Nigeria movement is aimed at courageous and patriotic Nigerians who crave a prosperous future. The recently launched group includes members of both major parties. Emmanuel John is a legal practitioner and a member of the movement. He speaks on its emergence and what it stands for.
It's a beautiful time for this group to come into being, considering the state the country is. No right or reasonable thinking human being, a good citizen, will ask the country to continue the way it is now. If you watch this group, our leader had clearly stated it that we had come to effect the desired change, not the change that some political parties fronted long ago and we were all swayed and we followed them.
Former President Obasanjo says the movement does not need to become a political party, though it could favor candidates for elections. He noted that he wished to remain strictly nonpartisan. On the other hand, Emmanuel John suggests that the Coalition for Nigeria should be registered as a political party in order to bring about needed change. He says the leadership of the movement is consulting stakeholders and will soon make its stand known. Nigeria's Minister of Information and Culture, Lai Mohammed, says calls for Buhari to step down or to run for re-election are a distraction from the president's busy agenda. He says the economy is improving in part because government is investing in agriculture as an alternative to dependency on one main commodity, oil. Chris Feinboom, spokesman of the ruling All Progressives Congress, APC, in Rivers State, says there are many reasons why the movement formed by former Nigerian president will not affect the ruling party's fortune in next year's election.
Majority of the Nigerian populace, unlike a few rich elite or fat cats, have come to appreciate the great job President Muhammadu Buhari is doing to rebuild Nigeria after several years of destruction through corruption and misgovernance. Many Nigerians are beginning to see the gradual but steady improvement in the agricultural, infrastructural, and social sectors of the Nigerian economy.
The opposition People's Democratic Party say the Coalition for Nigeria movement will also not affect its own future. Its national chairman, Uche Sekondu, says the PDP will regain the presidency in 2019, despite the best efforts of either the ruling party or the Coalition of Nigerians movement. For VOA Africa, I am Mike Mbonye in Enugu, Southeast Nigeria.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Yes, sir. True face.
NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
In Kenya each year, 40,000 cases of cancer are diagnosed, along with nearly as many deaths. About 20,000 Kenyan children die each year from the illness, which often is diagnosed in its late stages. Healthcare specialists are working to provide widespread support to those stricken with the illness, including financial support and better diagnostic support. Rael Omumbua reports for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Mordecai Odongo, a father of two, says he worked hard to educate his children. 15-year-old Craig Ododemba, his second child, has just made him proud by entering high school. In his second year, in 2016, he started having problems.
In April, when he was in school, so he was sick and off. He came back, he came home. I took him to the hospital. At one stage, he was diagnosed while in summer combat, he was suffering from pneumonia, different diseases like that.
It was only after 9 months and visiting several different hospitals that finally a doctor got the diagnosis right.
So when I took him for a biopsy, that's when we realized he was diagnosed. They found that he was suffering from cancer. We realized that he had cancer after a long time. He started sickling like in April, was sick on and off. Actually, we came to realize that he was suffering from cancer in December. So that's when he started the treatment.
Odongo says his first thought was his son would die. He did not tell his child what disease he was suffering from. After a series of counseling sessions, he finally told him and accepted his son's condition. Jobless at the time, Odemba says the National Hospital Insurance Fund footed 60% of the bills, but that the treatment was still very expensive. Like Odemba's family, many Kenyan families grapple with the cost of cancer care. A chemotherapy session costs about $140 at public facilities across the country. They're higher at private facilities.
The treatment was very expensive. Doing these tests, they were very, very expensive tests. And even when he was now diagnosed with cancer, it was still very expensive. And then the diet also was a very complicated diet. It was very expensive anyway.
A cancer package from the government-backed National Hospital Insurance Fund provides patients with chemotherapy, radiotherapy, CT and MRI scans at subsidized costs. Despite this assistance, treatment is not affordable for many. The World Health Organization reports that many children in low-income and middle-income countries do not receive or complete care. And as a result, over 90% of childhood cancer deaths occur in low-resource settings. Mordecai says he took care of his son the best way that he could.
When he was undergoing through chemotherapy, it was like now he was worse than before. Because, you know, when you are doing chemo, it kills even the good cells. Very, very delicate situations. At one stage, he recovered. He went back to school, but he took 2 weeks in school. Then later on, I think Alinyashewa on his way, Wakichesa too, I think. Then he was affected now in pneumonia.
Crayford Odemba died in May 2017, 1.5 days after contracting pneumonia, and 1.5 years after developing symptoms related to lymphoma. The World Health Organization reports that each year more than 200,000 children are diagnosed with cancer. If they are provided quality care, more than 80% of children can survive. Anne Koriri is a researcher at the Kenya Medical Research Institute. She has spent over 10 years researching cancer and other non-communicable diseases. Koriri is part of a team of professionals developing the first cancer registry in Kenya. It will give clear statistics on the country's cancer rates. So far, she says a lot is being revealed, including problems in diagnosing the disease.
We have very few pathologists in the counties who can be able to diagnose cancer. They have challenges in terms of infrastructure. You find a county that is catering for a big population of people, they do not even have a tissue processor machine, you know, to be able to process those tissues and check whether this is cancer or not. So these are the challenges I'm seeing where we do not have the capacity to really diagnose these cancers and be able to make informed decisions.
In Kenya, Parliament is seeking to enact legislation to promote e-health and telemedicine in the prevention and treatment of cancer. These technologies will enable cancer specialists, especially at Kenya's National Hospital, to extend their cancer expertise to remote areas. Rael Ombor, VOA News, Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. Coming up in the second half of the program, sports, and then music from our African collection for your listening pleasure and relaxation. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Good evening, sports fans. This is Nightline Africa Sport. Record-breaking winners, Egypt's Al Ahly, were the big winners on the first night of African Champions League last 32 ties. A 4-0 home win over Monana of Gabon put them in position to go through to the group's phase. Botswana's Township Rollers made headlines for the second round in a row with victory in Tanzania over Young Africans. Nigeria's Plateau United and Senegal's Generation Foot will have hope despite first leg defeats. Ahly were 2-0 up before halftime, and two goals from Abdallah Al Said in the second half secured the win. The eight-time winners and beaten finalists last year will travel to Gabon later this month for the second leg. Township Rollers 2-1 win over Young Africans in Tanzania gives them an excellent chance of going through and becoming the first team from Botswana to make the group stages. Nigeria's debutants, Plateau United, suffered a difficult start to their tie with former champions Etoile du Sahel, going 3-0 down in the first few minutes of the game in Sousse. By halftime, it was 4-0, but they were not humiliated, instead scoring twice in the second half to record a 4-2 defeat and give themselves a chance of turning the tie around in the second leg. In Tuesday's other game, Harare of Guinea secured a 2-1 home win over Generation Foot of Senegal thanks to a stoppage time goal from Sidi Diop. Elsewhere, Wydad Casablanca began the defense of their African Champions League crown with a thumping 7-2 win over Ivory Coast's Williamsville. It was the visitors who opened the scoring in Morocco, and at halftime it was 2-2, but in the second period, Wydad scored five times to earn an emphatic win. The other highlights from Wednesday's last 32 first-leg matches included a 4-0 home win for former champions TP Mazembe of DR Congo, who beat Song of Mozambique thanks to a hat-trick from Ben Malango. There were mixed results for some of the other big names in the draw. 2016 champions Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa were held to a goalless draw by Rayon Sports in Rwanda. 2016 semi-finalist Zesco United needed a good home result against ASEC Mimosas of Ivory Coast, but they were beaten 1-0 at home. And Nigeria's MFM earned a good 2-1 home win against Melodia Alga, but that away goal could make the difference when the second leg of the tie is played in Algeria later this month. In other football news, Cameroon's hosting of the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations received a major boost after Morocco threw its support behind the West Africans. The North African nation had positioned itself as a backup venue after doubts arose about Cameroon's ability to host. On Tuesday, Moroccan Football Federation President Fawzi Lajjer tried to distance his organization from such a stance. The 2019 finals will be the first in Nations Cup history to feature 24 teams after the tournament was expanded last year. Morocco hosted the African Nations Championship earlier this year and is also bidding to host the 2026 World Cup, with the decision on the successful bidder set for June. Talking of the 2026 World Cup, former FIFA president Sepp Blatter believes Morocco should stage the 2026 World Cup because of the logistical challenges thrown up by the joint bid from Canada, Mexico, and US. Blatter told reporters this week that joint bids are a nightmare. The 82-year-old Blatter said, in his words, "After the 2002 World Cup in Japan and South Korea, we concluded that co-organization was a nightmare. There has never been a co-hosted World Cup since, with Germany, South Africa, and Brazil all staging by themselves in 2006, 2010, and 2014, respectively. The 2026 finals will be the first to feature 48 teams, 16 more than the tally that will contest both this year's tournament in Russia and the 2022 event in Qatar. The North African nation is making a fifth bid to host the World Cup, having failed to land the 1994, 1998, 2006 and 2010 editions. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Yes, so now it's time for our Sunday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music. Here we go.
My baby mama, Sinachi, Tele Momodu, Sinachi Mo. No be by force to go Dubai. I've been awaiting cause the fight. In I just name my own, they laugh, yeah, because you got the day my side. They want to take away my favor. They want to spoil in my career. And then I say I get the flavor. And you feel taxing Abania. I forgive and I forget. Baba God, he knows the best. My papa just buy his jet. I'm about to take off everywhere.
What's in that I go name my first daughter Sinachi, my loving mother Sinachuku, promotion letter Sinachi, Iyawo mi Sinachi. Now we shutting down Malaysia, every show the boy they conquer. Thank you Lord, you showed me love, now I know I'm not alone. I go sing praises from house to church, I go throw party for every town. See my motto, see my mouth, tell me why I no go shout. Not because I suffer fast, not because I pray a fast, not be your show, not be just, not quite cheating. Tell me, what's in that cheek? I'm no quite, what's in that cheek? One name, man, what's in that cheek? I'm quite cheating. And I thank the Lord who oversee me, and I thank the Lord for humble smith, and I thank the Lord who give me power, oh, and I thank the Lord for all the riches. And they pray for house, you give me mansion, and they pray for car, you give me phantom, and they pray for fans, you give me stardom, oh, you they show me love, you know, be like. If no be God, where I for there? Whatever we go, give God the glory. We dey travel, dey go, dey come. Everything we do, dey prosper. Now because your name not favor, all is by the grace of God. Plenty people done the ask. Now which the Baba do the task? Yeah, the Baba do well for me. Now my life become better. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray and fast. No be your show, no be just. I'm watching.
Thank you! smile, na mini fly. You mean everything to me.
Kwa madawa, sezi kuwata. Kila malu nenda, mina kufuata. So guop kukuambia, mina kupenda. Atuwa uivu nao zao ni kusema sema. Yo manza lipigia simu, miata simjui. Mime kwa studio, tutukwa nae wapi juzi. Izo ni uongo, lonajua. Mlango angi kuwazo, kutaka kudi nimeifungua. Unasema apana, apana. Huku kilia, mina vumilia. Mina kazana, na kazana. After yote siamini bado zenambia. Kila kitu yangiru defeat. Vyolipotea tumtano lfrani mechizi. Silalu kusemu kweli sikuli. Kezani vana taskuzi situli. Nipige makofi labda na ota. Man kwa sepeme na scan kani mechoka. Kuzitetea pali niko mapali siko. Na setu metupa miaka sita hivyo. Unasema apana, apana. Ukukilia mina vumilia. Mina kazana, na kazana. After yote siamini bado zenambia.
Kia la heri kukupenda msiwezi jamani mpenzi kwa heri na kuwaga mi kwa heri nami ninakutakia la heri kukupenda msiwezi jamani mpenzi kwa heri
asira nyanyeni vana tulia biashara yetu bado mimi nimeshikilia na nguvu yangu yote naweza pesa yako kuna mali poa nimeiweka unaweza chuna kadhaa ukitaka zile zitabaki nunua nazo shamba lazima tufikie maisha yetu ya mbele si kila siku kelele kelele
tuki wana wewe mambo yako yaenda kombo japo nisonge hapo matatizo yako yako ma nakuwaga mi kwa heri nami nakutakia la heri kukupenda mi siwezi jamani mpenzi kwa heri nakuwaga mi kwa heri nami nakutakia la heri kukupenda mi siwezi jamani mpenzi kwa heri nakuwaga mi kwa heri nami nakutakia la heri kukupenda mi siwezi.
Yes, that was our Sunday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa. One man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. We are now witnessing the spectacle of the Secretary of State of the United States, Rex Tillerson, and the Foreign Minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, crisscrossing Africa at the same time. In fact, both Foreign Minister Lavrov and Rex Tillerson were at the same time in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, although there are no reports of their meeting together. And at the same time, Secretary of State Tillerson had moved on to Kenya, having been to Djibouti, and at the present time we have reports that he is not feeling well and may remain in Kenya until Monday. At the same time, Foreign Minister Lavrov had moved to its old allies in Africa, being Angola, has moved on to Zimbabwe, will move on to Namibia, and then also to Mozambique. The real interest is the visit of Foreign Minister Lavrov, the veteran foreign minister of Russia, and the man who is recognized as a very strong professional. He has now served for 14 years as Foreign Minister of Russia, and he reminds many of the veteran and legendary Foreign Minister of Soviet Union, Andrei Gromyko, who served for 28 years during the very bitter days of the Cold War. The question now being posed is whether Russia is coming back to Africa. As one may recall, when many African states achieved their independence in the 60s, the then Soviet Union under Premier Khrushchev became deeply involved in Africa. In fact, there was a confrontation between East and West in Congo. And in the end, after the arrest and assassination of Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba, the Soviet Union was checkmated in the Congo, and the bitterness that was felt by the then Soviet Union resulted in the establishment in Moscow of the Patrice Lumumba University, where many Africans trained and earned their degree. Russia also was a great supporter of the liberation movements then going on in southern Africa. They were trained by the Russians, they were provided weapon system, and a major involvement was when, under the Cuban leader Castro, an alliance was formed, and then Soviet Union encouraged Cuba to intervene in Angola to counter the forces of UNITA under Savimbi, who were being supported by then South African apartheid military forces. And it was the real fighting of Cubans in southern Angola and a major battle in the south that reversed the trend. Many believe that the Cuban troops gave the South African military a bloody nose. And from then on, the apartheid regime realized that it could no longer maintain its military might in southern Africa. But the president of United States, Reagan, insisted that the Cuban troops must withdraw from Angola in order to enhance the chances of the independence of Namibia. And the Soviet Union did support the negotiations conducted between Angola, Cuba, and those supporting the apartheid regime. An agreement was reached for the withdrawal of Cuban troops from Angola, and then followed quickly by the independence of Namibia. Now, with the end of the Cold War and the breakdown of the then Soviet Union, Russia gradually withdrew from Africa. So this major move, if it is a major move by Foreign Minister Lavrov, will mean a significant factor if the Russians are really returning. Recently, we have been hearing only about the Americans and the French involvement in the Sahel. We have been hearing about the Chinese involvement in many projects all over Africa. It is only now that we are hearing about the Russians coming back to Africa. Significantly, South Africa will be hosting the next exit of the BRICS, which means Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Russia and South Africa. And this may be a prelude to that summit in South Africa. Is Russia coming back? Well, as President Trump says now frequently,
We shall see. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Saida Hamdun, and our engineer tonight, Nick Ivanov, we thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Have a great week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The long reach of terrorism threatens to steal the future of countless Africans, said Secretary Rex Tillerson in a recent speech. In the last year alone, thousands of Africans have died at the hands of terrorists. In response to this growing threat, the United States sanctioned 7 ISIS-affiliated groups, including ISIS West Africa and ISIS Somalia, and their leaders, in an effort to cut off the resources that these groups use to carry out attacks. To prevail against such evil forces, said Secretary Tillerson, the United States has committed to working with African partners to rid the continent and the world of terrorism by addressing the drivers of conflict that lead to radicalization and recruitment in the first place, and building the institutional law enforcement capacity of African nations. Terrorism knows no borders. In the Sahel and the Lake Chad Basin, Boko Haram, ISIS West Africa, Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, and other groups are adaptable, they're resilient, and capable of launching attacks throughout the area, noted Secretary Tillerson. Regional cooperation is crucial to disrupting those attacks and denying these terrorist organizations the capability to plan and carry out attacks in the future. The nations of Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger, also known as the G5 Sahel, are pooling their expertise and resources to fight terrorism. To support their efforts, the United States has committed $60 million in security assistance to enable G5 Sahel countries to counter terrorism across the region. In addition, for more than a decade, the United States has supported the Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership to provide training and promote cooperation between military, law enforcement, and civil actors across North and West Africa. In East Africa, the United States has used the Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism since 2009 to do the same. The Counterterrorism Partnership Fund is another important resource that helps African partners build their capacity to counter terrorism. Since 2016, the United States has contributed more than $140 million to help partners prevent terrorist safe havens and the recruitment through these partnerships. The United States also provides the African Union mission in Somalia with training, equipment, mentorship, unarmed aerial surveillance, and operational support to enable African nations to fight terrorism in Somalia. There are no quick fixes to the terrorist threat, but the United States is committed to meeting the challenge head-on in partnership with African countries so the continent ultimately can become a place of prosperity, freedom, and safety.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.